This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. This is your host, guest host, Charles Giuliani, again filling in for Basima, still recovering from her heart attack. Hopefully she'll be back with us before too long. We have some very important guests tonight here to talk about an event that, amazingly, still many Americans aren't even aware of. We're talking tonight about the sinking of the USS Liberty back on June 8th of 1967. It's an event that most people who are aware of it think was an accident. That's the official government story. But, of course, upon close inspection, it turns out it was not an accident. It was a deliberate attack by the Israelis. The sorties were ordered to attack this essentially unarmed ship. It was an intelligence ship. And ever since then, the survivors and a great many other people joining with them have been pushing to get an investigation and to bring some sort of justice for this act of war is what it was. And to this day, nothing has been done about it. And it's an outrage, and not only because of what happened then, but everything else that's been happening since then, the inordinate influence that the powerful IPAC group, the Israeli lobby group in Washington, has, on our congressmen, getting us into wars that don't serve our interests but do serve Israel's interests. They're actually counter to our interests but only serve Israel's interests. I mean, it just goes on and on. Anyway, with no further ado, we have Joe Meters, who's actually one of the survivors. I hope I pronounced your name right there, Joe.
It's Meters.
Oh, Meters. Okay. Joe is an actual survivor. He was on the USS Liberty. We also have another very special guest, former Illinois Congressman Paul Findlay, who's been engaged in this war, for decades, trying to bring justice, not only about what happened with the USS Liberty, but trying to prevent the Israeli government from committing so many crimes that they've been committing. And then their representatives here right on our soil, manipulating our politicians, getting us involved in all kinds of quagmires and fiascos. Their crimes are piled heaven high. So with no further ado, let's welcome Paul Findlay. Welcome, sir.
Well, it's a great, great pleasure to be here. In fact, whenever I'm on a program with a survivor of the USS Liberty, I feel like standing up, because they are very special people in my life. They've been an inspiration to me every day since I first met them. And just a few days ago, I was in Iowa City, and I had vivid evidence that the false story of the Defense Department is still alive and kicking. They still view the deliberate effort by the government of Israel to sink the USS Liberty and destroy everybody aboard was an accident, which is absolutely untrue.
It's outrage.
Not the truth, but up in Iowa City, a local U.S. representative sent a note to the sponsor of the program where I appeared along with some survivors of the Liberty, and he copied in his letter the same lie about it being accidental that the Defense Department has been putting out for 45 years. It still lives. The cover-up is almost as complete as it was the day the accident occurred. not accident, I mean the day of the crime
what
occurred.
They claim, yeah, yeah. For those not familiar, this occurred in broad daylight. The U.S. flag was flying high. There's no possible way that they could ever call this an accident. And the attack occurred over a period of, what was it, pretty much an hour, wasn't it? I mean, they fired hundreds of rounds into the ship.
Well, they hit the ship with 821 holes. There's 821 holes in the ship, and the whole attack lasted. It's kind of hard to put a figure to it, but it was about 90 minutes in all.
And they knocked out the transmitter, so you couldn't even radio for help, right?
Yeah, the first air attack targeted communications capabilities and our defensive capabilities, so they put rockets inside each antenna mount to knock them out, and they put rockets inside each of the four 50-caliber gun tubs that we had, so we couldn't fire on any of the torpedo boats.
Absolutely astonishing. And again, this goes without saying, but this is an act of war. If any other country had ever done this to us, immediately, without hesitation, we would have, struck at them, struck back in retaliation.
Well, there is a story. There is a story that from a reporter for a Christian Science Monitor was a pilot on the USS America, and he said in an article written quite some time ago that aircraft off of the America were armed with nuclear weapons and launched for a strike against Cairo and were called off at the last minute.
Wow. And of course,
well, let me add just a little tidbit to the falsity of this thing. In the morning hours, which also were bright sunlight, with the flag visible from a quarter distance, reconnaissance planes from Israel flew around the Liberty several times. They were close enough to see the guys on the deck, and naturally they saw the U.S. flag, and their reconnaissance laid the basis for the assault that began in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. It lasted more than an hour, almost 2 hours. And late in the battle, a guy named Halbardier, I think that is a nice French name, one of the crewmen on the Liberty, crawled across the open deck despite the fact that the Israeli fighters were shelling the deck at the same time. He was able to clobber together a makeshift antenna and get a line to a cabin where they actually were able to get one SOS call out asking for help. And that call was, of course, heard by the Israelis as well as by the fleet in the Mediterranean, U.S. fleet in the Mediterranean. And captain of one of the carriers launched several fighter planes immediately when he heard that broadcast to go to the rescue of the Liberty because it was still under attack. And, of course, he immediately also notified Captain Geis, Admiral Geis, the commander of the aircraft carrier fleet in the Mediterranean. And Geis, of course, notified immediately the Situation Room in the White House, where the President and the Secretary of War of Defense, Robert McNamara, were there, and McNamara, on orders from Johnson, immediately responded to Admiral Geis, telling him to get the planes back on deck. Geis said, Mr. Secretary, I must appeal to higher authority. Those men are under attack, and we've got to help them. They need help.
Yeah.
And the answer came back from McNamara. He said, get those goddamn planes back on deck. And he said, you already have higher authority. The president's right here. And here's the phone. And the president got on the line, and he told Admiral Geis, I don't care if the whole ship goes down. I'm not going to go to war with an ally over a couple of sailors. So the admiral had to say, aye, aye, sir, and he sent word that the planes had to turn back from the rescue flight.
Unbelievable. I mean, this is treason. And here it is. What do we just have? The 45th year anniversary. 45 years have gone by and still nothing, no justice, no investigation, no nothing, no apology, denials, in fact, that it was accidental.
The ship was reeling. It was full of blood and broken bones and dead bodies.
How many casualties were there?
Dead, and about 171 were wounded. The Israeli Senate gunboat, it hit a torpedo that ripped a hole about 35 feet wide, no, 41 feet wide and 30 feet high. It was just barely above sea level. If they had gotten one more blast out, the ship would have gone down without trace, because when the captain decided they had to abandon ship, they lowered the rubber life rafts, and the Israeli pilots shot them to pieces, so they too sunk. There was no lifeboat or life raft to get into, so the crew at that moment had figured that they were all lost and would hit the bottom.
So, I mean, you must have been in absolute shock with your jaw drop. What's going on here? Why isn't any help coming to us? You know, it must have been
chaos. We were waiting for the Sixth Fleet to arrive, and they didn't arrive for 16 hours.
Come
to find out, the message that we got off via the antenna that Terry Halbardier connected was actually just a few minutes after the attack started. We got the message off to Sixth Fleet. Joe Tully of the USS Saratoga launches immediate strike force, and those were recalled before they reached the horizon. And then about 30 minutes later, they launched again, and those were recalled as well. And all the while, we were on the radio calling for help because we were still under attack. And we didn't know at the time that both flights of aircraft had been recalled.
And how would you like to be in the shoes of Admiral Geis, who had to listen to the commander-in-chief of all of our military services, including the USS Liberty, and here the commander-in-chief say, I don't care if the ship goes down, I'm not going to start a war with an ally over a couple of sailors.
Can you think of any other
Imagine
country?
Imagine the feeling he must have had. In fact, I learned from the family of Admiral Geis, he's dead now, but one of his children said that his dad worried for the rest of his life trying to figure out what he possibly could have done despite the order of the commander-in-chief to have the planes turned back. He was on his mind the rest of his life.
Unbelievable, man. This is just an outrage beyond words.
Well,
were you serving as congressman, Paul, at that time?
Pardon?
Were you serving as a congressman at that
time?
I
had been in Congress for 5 years, and I was newly on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. I was on the floor when I heard a New York congressman, I think his name was Lester Wolf, get the microphone and announce that there had been a case of mistaken identity in the Mediterranean, that the Israeli forces had mistakenly taken the Liberty for a Egyptian ship and mistakenly shot at the ship, but they had apologized to Johnson. He had accepted the apology and accepted their false excuse that it was a mistaken identity. And then he immediately ordered a total cover-up of the whole episode.
That figures.
And that was an act. Well, I think his callback of those aircraft is probably the first time in the history of the U.S. Navy that the commander-in-chief had ordered forces to withdraw from a mission of defense for a ship of the Navy, which was under assault. Probably the first time
he was leaving you to your deaths. As far as he was concerned, you could all perish.
Yeah, that recall, that ordering of
recall. I can understand why Johnson ordered a cover-up when it was over, because he had done what has to be regarded as an impeachable offense. And I think the fury of the American people would have caused the Congress to file a bill of impeachment against LBJ, and he probably would have been voted out of office by the Senate, had they known exactly what happened. But the truth never got out. That's the pity of it.
Yeah, the sad thing about it is now that members of Congress know exactly what happened, and they just don't give a damn it.
That's true. To this day.
Yeah, to this day.
I hate to interrupt with all my thoughts, but let me tell you an episode I had. I was out of Congress not too long after this episode. I didn't even know the details about it until I was out of office when I read Jim Manus's book. But I did my best calling around, talking to my former colleagues in the House. One of them was, I forget his name, but he was chairman of the Armed Services Committee. And I made my plea to him, and it was as if I was talking to a stone wall. He made no response whatever. But I had another interesting episode when I called on Charles Bennett of Florida. A man that I had held in high respect all through the years. He was a Democrat, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, and at that point, he had announced his retirement. He was in the last year of service, and he was chairman of the Sea Power Committee, subcommittee of the Full Armed Services Committee. And I told him what the Liberty crew was up against and why they needed a hearing on the Hill so they could tell exactly what happened. To my amazement, the man stood up. He always used a cane. He banged the cane on the floor, and he shouted, "I won't do it." All that would do would be to make some of my constituents feel bad. He had no concern about the feelings of the USS Liberty crew. He had more concern about constituents that might feel bad once the details of the episode were made public and the blame was put directly on the government of Israel for ordering the assault.
Can you think of any other country on the planet that could ever get away with something like that? I can't think of any.
Well, no other country would try it. I guess I have to conclude that the lobby for Israel knew it was a long shot. They might be discovered, but I guess they felt confident they could get by with it. They could get by with anything they did to the United States, including killing a bunch of sailors, which they did.
Well, you know, not to get off the topic too much, but this ties in. I'm sure you gentlemen are aware of, you know, many, many times over the years, Mossad agents have been caught spying in the United States on very high-profile individuals in the State Department, the White House, the Pentagon. And every time, all they do is they send them back to Israel, and then within a few months, they're back here doing it again. Nothing happens to them. and yet they call themselves our closest ally. How do you call that an ally? That's something an enemy does.
Well, this episode proves that Israel can even commit murder of U.S. citizens and get by with it,
and nothing gets done.
Exchange greetings and happy thoughts with the governor of the United States the next day.
I tell you what, I'm sure most of our listeners are aware of the dynamics of this, but in case there's some new listeners, you know, that aren't aware of what was going on at the time, could one of you put into perspective for us, you know, what could have driven Israel to, and obviously this was a deliberate attack, but why? What would motivate them to do something like this?
Well, it was a long shot. They had actually virtually won the war. I don't think they had this in mind as anything that would strengthen their war, because they were dealing with Syria by then, and they were about to beat their tanks. And I asked Commander Davis, the senior Navy guy aboard the Liberty, who was badly wounded and had been called to Admiral Geis's cabin, where Geis was so shaken by his conversation with Bob McNamara and LBJ that he closed the cabin door and he said, "I'm just afraid I'm going to be ordered to keep silent about what happened today, and I want you to know exactly what happened." And he told that to Davis, and Davis repeated that to me. But Davis, I asked Davis, "Well, what on earth made Israel attempt such a stupid act? Not only bloody and lethal, but stupid." And he said, "All I can figure out is that they wanted to they wanted the ship to go down without a trace. They would then blame Egypt, an Arab state, for the act against the USS Liberty. The American people would be so furious with an Arab state that they would declare war on behalf of by the side of the state of Israel, and participate in the cleanup of the war that was underway. They figured this would bind our Navy, our military forces, tightly, so tightly that they would always be together in every crisis from that day forward."
And so they could get us to fight a war for them.
It's about the only valid excuse that I can think of, and I think it is plausible. He also added that the Israelis had captured so much Arab land in the war that they were afraid that the world community might force them to vacate their stolen territory, and he thought that getting the U.S. on Israel's side against the Arab states would calm down any such maneuver.
Unbelievable. There's so many directions to go here. Another idea that I had heard, too, another motivation, I'd like to get your take on this, both of you, is that this being an intelligence ship, the USS Liberty, that they were afraid, and that's another reason to knock out their transmitter, not just so they couldn't radio for help, but so that they couldn't pick up any more intelligence, but possibly that they feared that this ship had picked up their transmissions, showing that they were the ones who were attacking Egypt and not the other way around. They were trying to make it look like Egypt was attacking them without provocation, but they were edging them on. Would you say that might be another possibility?
Well, that is a possibility. Another possibility is that the Israelis had slaughtered so many Egyptian troops in the Sinai. That word had not gotten out, and the Liberty, of course, would have picked that up, and they might have taken this big chance just to keep that from public consumption.
Right. But they didn't want to be seen as the aggressor.
They didn't need help to win the war, that was sure. But they nevertheless took this high-stakes, high-risk action, an act of perfidy that's hard to match, much less beat.
So, Joe, I wanted to ask you, you obviously must know Ernie Gallo. Huh? You probably knew him from back in on the ship.
I didn't know him on the ship. He was one of the NSA guys, and we didn't associate much with those guys.
Oh, I didn't know he was NSA, really.
Yeah, they were snobs.
But I'm sure you've gotten to know him over the years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've interviewed him. How's he doing? Is he still fighting the fight? I'm sure.
Yeah, he's still fighting the fight. Getting discouraged and depressed just like the rest of us, but he's still hanging in there.
Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting, the total silence that you get. I mean, come on, 45 years later, most of the people that were in power then aren't even alive anymore, and still nothing is getting done. What does that tell you?
What outrages us right now, what outrages me is when you write to a member of Congress about the liberty and ask them to do all this stuff for you, and they come back with this boilerplate that the very last sentence says, we honor your service. And then I write back and it says, we don't want your honor, we want the truth.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah, they're just trying to puff up your ego, hoping that you'll...
Yeah, but we know better.
Be quiet. Yeah.
We've been doing this for decades.
Now,
I would like to put in a little comment about LBJ. He was a peculiar personality, and I think his close associates from that time on would confirm that. He did some great things, for example, in civil rights. I salute him for that. But this is about the most despicable thing that any commander-in-chief could ever conceive. And he did it and made no apologies, and he got everything hushed up. By the way, all of the documentation about messages about the callback of the fighter planes immediately disappeared. You can't find a sheet of paper any place in the government of the United States would refer to that.
Wow. Yeah, they've done a pretty thorough job, haven't they?
Well, LBJ protected himself by that action. It will be argued probably by some people that LBJ had a war on his hands in the other part of the world. He didn't want to alienate the Jewish community in the United States from the support they had been giving to the war effort in Vietnam. That might be an excuse, but it's not a good excuse.
No, no.
Not an adequate excuse.
Have either of you heard this? I understand that LBJ may actually have been, his mother apparently was a Sephardic Jew. That could be a possibility, a motive, too.
Well, it could be. He was always a deeply involved supporter of Israel for years, not just recently.
Right.
And he
majorly increased foreign aid, for example. He dropped the Dimona investigation that Kennedy was pushing for. You know, he wanted an account of what was going on there, and, LBJ just dropped that whole issue like a hot potato.
Well, hey, Joe, I didn't mean to talk so much here tonight. I'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, let's hear from
Joe. Okay, you're a congressman.
So
you're talking about documents disappearing. One interesting note is after the attack, they, of course, held a court of inquiry, and it lasted, I think it was 4 days of testimony they took, and they talked to, I think, 14 out of the 190-some people on board. And one of the guys that testified was Lloyd Painter, and he was the officer of the deck during the attack. It was the morning of the attack. And one of the things he witnessed was the torpedo boats machine gunning a life raft, and he testified to that effect during the court of inquiry under oath. And he thought the testimony was being taken down verbatim. Come to find out, when the report was released some 13 or 14 years later, his testimony didn't even appear in the record. It wasn't redacted like it appeared there, and then they scratched it out with black ink.
It just never entered.
Never appeared in the first place. And of course, when we contacted the DOD and the U.S. Navy JAG to find out why it wasn't there, and tell them that Lloyd testified to this effect, and the testimony wasn't in the record, their response was, "Well, when he was before the court, he should have testified about it, and it would have been in the record."
At least one of the sorties that flew in these missions has come forward, possibly more than one, but I remember reading at least one who admitted that when he radioed in and said, this is not an enemy ship, it's a United States ship, that he was told, you have your orders, carry him out. In other words, shoot it anyway.
Oh, yeah. We heard that he returned to base, he refused to attack, returned to base, and he was court-martialed.
Wow. Now, have you ever met with this individual? Do you know him?
No, but he talked to Paul McCleskey talked to him once.
Yeah.
And, he's kind of disappeared.
Court-martialed. Unbelievable.
Joe Ronkowski, John Ronkowski. John Ronkowski was one of the survivors who died about a year ago, I believe. And he told me that he was there when Admiral Kidd, the head of the inquiry, approached a bunch of the survivors, and with a very stern look on his face, and wearing the four stars of a four-star admiral and his cap, he said, if any of you say a word about what actually happened on June the 8th, you will be fined or sent to prison or even something worse. And John Ronkowski told me that he was trembling from head to toe, and some of the shipmates who got that threat were in the hospital cots, and they were all told to keep their mouths shut and never say a word about what actually happened. Now, later
But it was an accident, mind you, but yeah. Just don't say anything.
Well, it's not a joke. I shouldn't laugh.
What they should have done is conducted a real investigation back then, and concluded that it was an accident, and then it would have gone away. It wouldn't be here now. But now they have to, in order to investigate it properly, they have to investigate not only the attack but the cover up, and that's what members of Congress, I think, that's why they don't want to get involved, is because they have to explain why they allow war crimes committed against the U.S.
Wow. There is now so much printed literature about the assault on the Liberty, not just one book, but I think about five or six. And I've mentioned it in two of my books, historians eventually are going to be able to sort out the truth, and I think they will be absolutely dumbfounded about the true facts of that day.
Now, Paul, are your books still in print, or...? Your books, can people still get them? Are they still available?
Oh, yes. I had a whole chapter in They Dare to Speak Out, which was my best-known book. In fact, it sold over 300,000 copies, and it still provokes the mail that I get, and I'm always delighted to hear from somebody who finally read it. But it has quite a life of its own, and my recent memoir, Speaking Out, which was published in June, has quite a section about the Liberty, and especially the likelihood that LBJ would have been impeached had the truth been known.
Oh, sure. No question. Now, do you have a website where people can order your books, or are they available on Amazon?
Amazon.com has the book, and the American Educational Trust in Washington, D.C. has all of my books on sale. I don't know whether Barnes & Noble has this book or not. They've had my other books, and they probably have this one as well.
And how about you, Joe? Do you have anything that you wanted to mention, anything to share, any website or anything? Or?
Sure. We have a website that has a store included in it with that has a bunch of paraphernalia on it, including a number of books, a number of DVDs. The website is USSLibertyVeterans.org, O-R-G, and then there is the ship's store. And it tells something about the attack and ways for people to get involved.
Excellent. So
let me add another startling aspect of this story.
Sure.
Admiral Kidd, a distinguished four-star admiral, was given the duty of preparing what was called a report on the episode. Before he left Washington, he was under orders from LBJ to issue a finding that would absolve the State of Israel from any responsibility for the assault. So it was to be a phony report, and it certainly was. In fact, the legal advisor to Admiral Kidd on that trip, named Boston, Captain Boston, kept silent for about 20 years, and then he finally had his conscience got the better of him, and he finally told the truth in a notarized statement that had some publicity. In that statement, he said that he knew that both himself and Admiral Kidd knew that it was a deliberate attempt on the part of Israel to sink the ship, although their report never mentioned that in any sense.
Unbelievable. Tell me, over the years as a congressman, I know that you have been fighting this fight for a long time, not just with the USS Liberty, but just with the inordinate and very often criminal involvement of the Israeli government in U.S. politics. What kind of experiences you must have? Well, I'm sure you've got plenty of stories to tell, but is there anything that stands out in your mind, you know, more than anything else, if you had threats?
I've been involved in this not only in the last 10 years of my service on the Hill, but in the 25 years that have followed, because I never eased up on it. I was determined to get the facts out every day of my life. I'm still at it. I hope I live long enough to see it happen. I'm 90 years old, so I don't have a lot of years left, but I still have that hope. But my whole dream was that I could alert the American people to the blemish on the name America that has occurred by our close affiliation with the deeds or the misdeeds of the government of Israel. They have given us a bad name throughout most of the world.
Sure.
Most of the rest of the world cannot imagine why a superpower like the U.S. government has to be led around by the nose by a small nation of, I guess, 6 million people. But the truth is that small group of people have established a network of contacts throughout our entire society, not just government, but every
sure.
aspect of our society has instilled fear of Israel. Everyone has some reason to stay out of any criticism of Israel, even if to mention a syllable or a word that would cast Israel in a bad light. They fear it will affect their job, their business, their membership in country clubs and things like that. It's a level of fear that is almost incomprehensible, but it exists throughout our country, and the result is that our entire society has become subservient to the State of Israel. And it's bad for Israel, it's bad for Judaism, and it's certainly bad for the American people.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever, you know, had any threats or anything over the years? I'm sure.
I wish I had fought harder and with greater effect. I wish I had done more to assemble a group of like-minded members of the House. There were two or three of them that I generally could count on, but if I could have had, say, five who would always take a stand on this, they would present a much bigger challenge to the lobby at the next election day than if there's just one speaking out all the time like myself.
I tell you what, we got, time is really running away on us here. We've got a few questions coming in text form from some of the listeners. You want to take some questions? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this one person, Paul in Florida, is wondering, does either Joe or Paul think that there are any Congress members now who are brave enough to stand up against AIPAC? And then they mentioned how they heard that many congressmen, Israel plays host to them when on vacation, and that's true. They've been having them spend, weeks or months at a time, all expenses paid, kind of buying them off type of thing. Do you see any exceptions to this?
The answer to the question is no.
There were only two House members who voted against this recent bill that acted as if it was conveying total blank checks to the state of Israel forevermore. One was John Conyers, a brave guy from Detroit. The other was he's way up in years. I think he's the longest-serving member of the House. But he has been brave several times, and I hope he'll continue to speak out. We should remember his name.
Dinkins?
John Dingell.
Oh, okay.
I'm a Republican, and I'm sorry to say that I can't name a single Republican who would do it.
And then, of course, we have, he's not in serving anymore, but we have Jim Traficant. Have you ever met him, Paul?
Well, I don't believe I ever met him. I've lost track of him. Where is he now?
I'm not sure. He was in prison, of course, as I'm sure you know. They set him up because he was speaking out against Israel and their inordinate influence.
The plight of that guy from Ohio who was accused of being one of the leaders of a concentration camp. It could be that he was employed, but I can't imagine that he had any authority.
Right. Let's see. We got a few more minutes here. We've got another question. Silver in New York, he asks, he or she, I would like to know what was the first step that the survivors took when they returned to the base regarding, reporting that Israel had done this and, tried to blame the Arabs. What was the first step that was taken to, there was actually an investigation, a so-called investigation, even before you disboarded the ship. Is that correct?
Yeah, they had a the investigating officers come on board when we were in Malta, and they conducted the investigation there. But we really, we were told every day at quarters not to talk about it. And, of course, I got out and I got transferred off the ship shortly after we got back. So I didn't know much of what was going on. All the other crew was dispersed because the ship was decommissioned and sold for scrap. So we really didn't know anything about what happened. We thought that everything would have been taken care of and didn't learn later, quite a bit later, the specifics about the attack. And because we were all dispersed, and in 1980 we started the USS Liberty Veterans Association, and we started to talk amongst ourselves, find each other and talk amongst ourselves, and find out, put the puzzle together of what actually happened, compare that to the Court of Inquiry report and find out that was just a bunch of hooey, and proceed from there.
Just think of the hundreds of thousands of officials that have taken part in what they knew was a lie.
Yeah.
Think of the baggage they carry to the grave and the baggage that keeps them from speaking out today. If I had been defending the notion that this was a pure accident and had been repeating the garbage year after year, I'd think a long time before I tried to reverse field and deny the truth of what I'd been saying.
Yeah, I think if it was actually an accident, they would have investigated it already. But the fact that they refused to...
how can you call that an investigation? That, you know, you were told to be quiet. They didn't interview the very people that were targets of this thing, the eyewitnesses. Good heavens.
Well, they deliberately passed up anybody who might insist upon getting his words actually published.
And unfortunately, this type of so-called investigation, you know, we've seen this many times since, cover-up after cover-up.
You can imagine what a young sailor would feel when he had this four-star admiral threaten him with prison or worse. If he said a word about it, he's going to keep his mouth shut. I first knew about it when I read Jim Ennis's book. I got it in the office. I think Jim's publisher probably sent a copy to every member, and I took my copy on a overseas trip that I took, and when I got through reading that, I really couldn't imagine anything worse that had happened to our country.
It's an absolute tragedy. Anyway, unfortunately, we've run out of time. An hour just isn't enough time, but...
Okay, I enjoyed being with you. Bye, Joe.
Yeah, bye. We'll talk to you later, Paul.
Keep up the great work, and thanks very much for joining us.
We sure will. Thanks for your time.
You bet. Okay, bye. Folks, that's it for tonight. I just want to remind you, next week we're going to be having law professor Kenneth Nunn. We were supposed to have him on a couple of weeks ago, but there was a crazy mix-up. But he's going to be coming on talking about the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case. So you don't want to miss that. It's going to be very interesting. So we'll see you next week, same time, folks. Have a great week, and we'll catch up with you then. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office as summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.